The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with Kia Credit. Flexible 142 finance solutions from Kia, home of the 7-year warranty.
The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, by day, Jerry Galligan is a risk manager in a big international company, but in his spare time, his passion is actually taking risks, because he's a climber who's enjoyed adventures on unclimbed mountains and in unexplored valleys in the Indian Himalaya. He's just published his first book, Climbing Ramabang. Jerry's with me in studio. Jerry, good morning to you.
Good morning, Catherine.
All right, first of all, congratulations on getting the book out there, finished and published.
Thank you.
What sort of a journey was that?
Well, it's hard work, as you know yourself from your own writing.
Yeah.
It takes a long time, and when you have a busy job, you know, it's and other domestic demands, it's, you know, it can be a challenge, but it's it has to be done.
Well, listen, as I said, so you're a risk manager. Yet, would you not say climbing mountains is probably a very risky business?
It can be, but so can walking across the street, you know. So can just living life in general is full of risks, you know. There's just different levels of risks, you know. So it's something we all have to manage in our daily lives.
Sure. But I suppose climbing mountains is one thing. Doing various established routes is one thing. But in unexplored valleys and, you know, creating new routes up to the top of these incredible mountains, that is risk taking, in my view.
It is, yeah, of course. You know, most adventure sports have an element of risk. I suppose for me, the attraction of the mountains is doing new things in the mountains. Mm. You know, a lot of mountains in the world have been climbed. There's a lot unclimbed still, and it's just a matter of having an imagination and a vision to do something new, explore new valleys, new routes, as you say, first ascents on peaks, or rock climbing or ice climbing. The attraction for me would be the new element, the creative aspect of the sport.
Okay, so how did you get into it in the first place?
Well, it's you know, about 15 years ago I started actually, I dabbled in sailing, and that led into hill walking. And I was interested, you know, since my mid-20s in general fitness and adventure sports. And I suppose it was a natural organic progression from hill walking into scrambling and then the technical realms of rock, ice and alpine climbing. And when you get into something like, you know, any activity, you know, you become more involved and you get little ideas for doing projects and you lose yourself in this little world, you know. Mm. And that's how it developed for me.
So do you find that you can lose yourself when you're up these extraordinary mountains and you're in these incredible places in various parts of the world, that you can absolutely separate Jerry, who works as a risk manager in Dublin, to Jerry, whose dream it is to do these sort of things?
You can. I thought for a second there you're going to say get lost in the mountains and never be found again. But yeah, you can separate very much. For me, I find like climbing and mountaineering, going to remote parts of the world, or even, you know, corners in this country or elsewhere in the British Isles, you can detach yourself from your day-to-day cares. I mean, most of us live very busy, demanding lives, and, you know, having to work for a living, it's not something we would necessarily choose to do if we had the means otherwise. But you can
some people kind of live for their jobs.
Oh, true. Sorry, I'm just generalizing there, but
yeah.
But you can, it allows you to detach yourself from your day-to-day cares. Mm. Rock climbing, for example, is a brilliant example where you're moving on rock and the activity demands total concentration on climbing, that all your cares and worries in the world, you notice them just dissipating. And it's almost like a form of meditation, where you just get into a comfortable zone where you're just climbing and you just enjoy living and experiencing that activity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so talk to me about the expedition that you based climbing Ramabang on. How did it all come about? I mean, and where did the desire to head to that particular part of the world, that the Indian Himalaya, all begin?
Yeah, it started, I think, in 2002 when pals of mine, Roger McMorrow and Sarah Spencer, went off to India, and they made the first ascent of a 6,000-metre mountain called Dreacht Parvat, Magic Mountain. And that kind of resonated with me as something I'd like to try at some stage in the future. And over the years, that idea grew of going to the Himalayas, attempting a first ascent, and then just doing an expedition like that. But over the years, the idea grew into something bigger than a bigger adventure of not just making an attempt at first ascent in the Himalayas, but also traveling and traveling home overland from the Himalayas. And, you know, after a while, I developed a kind of an obsession to go off and do the mountaineering and also get a motorbike and travel home overland, have a second adventure, if you will, and see what kind of experiences I had there, you know. As it turned out, the bike trip home didn't quite pan out for bureaucratic reasons, but I did travel home overland, having made a successful first ascent of the mountain we called Ramabang. And so I had effectively two adventures for the price of one.
Well, before we talk about the adventure coming home, which sounds incredible in itself, talk to me about the preparation and to achieve what you did climbing Ramabang. How do you organize? How do you manage everything from this part of the world? How do you find the route up? Are you liaising on the ground constantly with climbers and experts over there, or how does it work?
Mixture of everything. You do a lot of research to find unclimbed peaks. You have to do a lot of research, reading alpine journals and magazines, previous expedition reports into that general area, that range, and picking people's brains who have some knowledge, however poor or however great. So gathering as much information as you can and then seeing what might be possible. And obviously, if you can get hold of maps, they can be priceless, you know. Mm-hmm. And maps are often available and sometimes not. So getting as much information as you can. And then it's a project of having a vision of what may be achievable and then putting together a team, getting the funds, getting the time to away from work and away from here to dedicate to it, and getting all the gear and having the technical skills and the know-how and the logistics in place. And you do rely somewhat on, say, agents for logistics in the likes of the Himalayas. So a broad project with a broad team and a lot of focus. That's
Did you
required.
Analyse the risk, the ratio risk you were taking by doing this?
You do. You do. That's ongoing management. And that's ongoing management in life as well.
So for somebody who's sitting there who maybe has an interest in hill walking or is trying to imagine this adventure that you went on, what do you take from it? What do you remember of it? What was the most special part of achieving something like this for you?
I suppose at a very deep level, you're really experiencing life and doing what you want to do and doing what you dream and fulfilling a dream. Mm-hmm. And there's great satisfaction in that. And even if you fail, at least you have a go, but you're still living your dream. So that's the deep satisfaction. Certainly,
One of the best pieces of advice I got, you know, fail at what you love. Don't fail at what you don't like to do.
Yeah,
you know?
Catherine, life is too short to fail at things you don't want to do.
Absolutely.
You know, certainly I think if you have the time and if you're lucky enough to attempt what you'd like to do in life. And again, if you fail, so what? You had a go.
So you climbed this, you achieved this incredible adventure. Talk to us about your overland trip back.
Well, that was quite mind-blowing, to be honest. I travelled a lot as a young fella in my 20s. You know, I left here during the 80s when it wasn't a great time to find a job here. So I travelled a lot as a young fella. And I had a hankering to do something like that again, you know, after many years. And the bike idea just developed, and getting a bike and coming home. So I thought, if I'm going off to the Himalayas to do a big adventure, why don't I maximise this and take 6 months off, if I can, and then do travelling after the mountaineering expedition? And as I say, it was quite revelatory, because you're experiencing cultures and peoples and religions and political systems that, you know, you don't find walking to the office in, say, RT in Donnybrook every day, or into town, you know, into your office. So I was interested in just experiencing more about the world outside, you know, the normal day-to-day world that we know here in this country.
You know? And how long did it take you to come back? You went through Asia all the way right across Europe.
Yeah,
and back.
Yeah.
How long did that
Nepal
take?
And northern India, Pakistan, Iran, Turkey, and across Europe, overland home. 6 and a bit weeks.
And did you do this on your own?
I did, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then what's it like returning to the day job? Because I get the impression from you that you work to earn money to do these sort of things. Would that be a fair analysis?
Don't tell my boss that. That would be a reasonable analysis, yeah. Again, it's working to live.
But would you say, I mean, in the book...
Sorry, to answer your question, it was quite actually easy to go back to work because, you know, I went off, had a great adventure and effectively realised that little dream. And I was ready to go back to my normal life here and resume working. Plus, I needed to earn
needed
a living.
Needed the few bob, but that's it. Because you say in the book that chasing after money or status is pointless. At the same time, you work for a big company, you have an MBA. So you are part of a modern society. But is that just, as I said, only to allow you escape and do what you do?
Yeah, we all have to work to live in this money economy. So at whatever. So I suppose it's the shackles that binds many of us to, you know, existing in the lives and the working lives we do. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, there's more to life than just work, you know. Sure. And if you're lucky enough, as you say, to get a job that is your passion, you know, you're very fortunate indeed.
Absolutely. Well, listen, your Himalayan adventure wasn't the first time you were a pioneer. You developed numerous rock climbs around Ireland and they have intriguing names. And I always love these names that mountaineers come up with. Chasing the Dragon, which is in Wicklow, Karmic Retribution, which is in the Burn, and Blind Faith in Connemara. So where do you get these? Where do the inspiration for the names come from?
Again,
and just to clarify, I suppose, these are new routes, new ascents on mountains that haven't been created before.
Yeah, rock climbs on crags. I suppose rock climbing is a subculture in itself, you know. And often when a crag is being developed, what we call developed new routes being put up by climbers, there's naming conventions used or routes that follow a particular pattern of our naming convention that the first climbers put on them. And it can often be a reflection of the culture of a given time. I'll give you an example. In the 1970s, in Lugalaw in County Wicklow, there's a fantastic granite cliffs there in Lugalaw. And the routes were put up there largely in the 70s by Hartshaw climbers. And the names they put on them reflect the culture of space exploration at the time in the 70s. Remember the late 60s, nearly.
And well, I don't 70s. Remember, but
remember well. let me tell you.
I know what you're talking about.
There was many space missions by the Americans, like Apollo and landings and so forth. So a lot of routes were named after the space culture at that time. You've got routes like Soyuz 10 and Sputnik and Voyager and Klingon and Search for Spock, and so interesting, amusing names like that. And also on the same crag, there's names, the name convention is named after the rock music culture at that time. So you've got roots like Aqualung and Steppenwolf and all along the Watchtower.
So it's tapping into the zeitgeist at that.
Yeah, exactly. The zeitgeist, very, very, very good word. It is tapping exactly into that. And it follows on other climbers come along and they have to, you know, obey the protocol. They don't often because they can be anarchic, but very often they do obey the protocol and continue on with that naming convention. Karmic Retribution, the one you mentioned there, was a route I put up myself and a good friend of mine, Barry Watts, put up in the Burren there a few years ago. And it was after the bust of the Celtic Tiger, where there was the country and it was still troubled, but the banks went broke and taxpayers were saddled with massive debts. And so effectively, Barry started naming the routes after that kind of implosion. And you've got routes like Jingle Mail or Sight Pass or Sacred Cows. In other words, to kind of reflect the greed and avarice of the time.
You know?
Karmic retribution is what you get when you become too greedy, you know.
I like it. Well, listen, it's been great talking to you. Quick question I have to ask. Is it true you don't own a mobile phone?
It is, yes.
It's been a long time since I met nobody. Why?
I've never been bothered with mobiles, with, you know, some particular gadgets. I just can't be bothered.
Even in emergencies, climbing?
Well, I make an exception that we often take satellite phones with us into the mountains, because very often mobiles don't work.
Okay, well, where and when can people hear your story? They obviously can't ring you.
Well, I use what's known as a landline.
Really? What's that? You're speaking at the Clifton Arts Festival.
I am next month on the 27th of September, and I'll be talking about the book, about the travelling, about the mountaineering. The book is available in shops. Most shops, if they don't have it, they can order it in. It's available as an e-book as well online. And it's called Climbing Ramabang.
Ramabang. Jerry Galligan, thanks for coming in to chat to me.
Thank you, Catherine.
Text 51551. The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1.